What kind of questions, complaints, criticisms, or anything I can do to help you today? Or why did you come? Why did you have to give up? You didn't get to come during your lunch hour. So I just appreciate you being here. Any questions?
Comments? If you do have questions, we have microphones, so just signal us and we'll get them to you so we can get all this recorded and documented.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
Official, right?
I need to change two or three things here. Well, Carter, I didn't say all those nice things about you. I know you all got to have questions. Bankers always have questions.
Well, we appreciate what... We really do appreciate what you all have done, and we are proud of our local groups, Carter, the EDC, the Industrial Foundation, our city and county government. And a lot of times, we know in any aspect of life, you've got to have vision, and most people don't see it until it happens. And so I feel like Hawkinsville and Christian County's tried really hard for a long time, and we appreciate your support. Sometimes I think some of our local elected officials don't understand what the long game is, and so anything that you can recommend, I wish more of them were here today, but anything that you can recommend that just average citizens like us can do to help them feel involved would be appreciated.
Just keep doing what you're doing, and part of the message has to be, if it doesn't get done, it won't happen. And there's some great books out there and a lot of great magazines, but they're also a little on the scary side. If you go back and look at the Industrial Revolution, it took, what, 75 years? If you go look at the dot-com and all the revolution that took place, it took 20, 25 years. We're in an era where that next big revolution of change using artificial intelligence and all those sorts of things, it's probably a 10 to 15-year horizon, if not less. And the speed of change is just a fact of life. And so if you don't do it, if you don't have a vision, if you don't have a plan to kind of work on that vision, then nothing happens. You know, I was taught early on that if you don't have great leadership, nothing will happen. It's leadership, strategy, then you got to structure like the groups you just mentioned, then you got to have a process. Local officials, and you know, this is an editorial, and there's going to be some magistrates or... here's what I believe. And I went through this with three chairmen at Whirlpool, two of them anyway. No matter the fact that they knew they likely were going to be in the succession plan the minute that the previous chairman got named, because I was told, first thing you do when you're named chairman is you start looking for your successor. It didn't matter how much work they had done. The two new chairmen that I worked for told me, sitting in their office after a couple of months, this is a heck of a lot harder than even I thought it was. Leadership is hard. So I think what I see a lot of times is when someone becomes the mayor or the county judge, I'm not saying you did when you were on the court or city commissioner, it's sometimes human nature to look at the leader and to be critical of the leader and not of yourself, not being critical of anybody. But I think sometimes we need to help reinforce that it takes a lot of guts and it takes a lot of passion to become that leader for that very reason. But in a community without a leader, nothing will happen. And so I think we got to keep reinforcing that. And for those that run for state elected positions, or Jason, those that take care of our adjunct, leadership is leadership, and without it, you don't have anything. So I really feel like that is critically important.
Some of our strong leaders are here. It's the people who aren't here
I know, and I wish I could give you a magical answer. If I could do that, I'd be on the... Well, I'm too boring to go out and speak, but I'd be out on the road giving everybody, you know, my 2 cents worth for how to create change. But I think it's being honest, transparent, Mayor, having these kind of sessions, because the more you do that, the more community folks that maybe didn't come hear about it, and they say, well, where were the other elected officials?
Secretary Noel, I'm Taylor Hayes with the Christian County Chamber of Commerce.
I've met you several times. You know to call me Jeff, too, by the way.
I know. This question is not to be loaded or political, but I think we have to ask ourselves, I'd like to ask you how tariffs and or the immigration component that's taking place right now is affecting from your standpoint, economic development, as it relates to activity or what you're sensing from companies here in the state of Kentucky. I hope you think that that's, I don't mean for that question to be political by any means.
At this stage of my life, I don't worry about repercussions. I don't, which is kind of nice, by the way. It's great to have that level of confidence. Not in myself, but in the fact that who cares. But I'm going to give you my honest opinion, not from the governor, not from anyone, although I think he's articulated some of the same things. First, on tariffs. It is so multifaceted, I got to break down just a few areas because it's not a simplistic answer. First of all, I never have believed that tariffs should be your trade policy. It's the same thing as saying, I need to be given subsidies or I need to be given special advantages in order for me to compete. Well, I'm not really competing. I'm just making myself feel like I can compete. You need to have, in my humble opinion, tariffs that are used to make sure that everyone plays by the rules. And I'm going to tell you one of the reasons why I think President Trump is correct. And that is, we have an awful lot of countries and an awful lot of companies that take advantage of what has been a very open-minded, free trade country. You know, when I was at Whirlpool, we had two competitors from another country, great companies. They were dumping product into this country from Mexico. So we did an anti-dumping act. Overnight, when it got imposed, they closed those factories and moved to China. We did another anti-dumping. Same thing. Really, with almost within 48 hours, they closed, moved to Southeast Asia. Then they did exactly what I told President Trump personally that they would do. They'll build facilities here, and they have. Now I was competing with them. You do need tariffs to keep people honest and to make sure that we are not being taken advantage of. Because if you go back 20 years ago, Europe was the same GDP as ours. Today, they're about half because they've created more socialistic policies, a lot of protectionist policies. I don't think you can go that way and sustain your economic growth for the long term. However, you do need to, you know, tell folks that we're the biggest country, it's the richest country, this is where you can make margins. Therefore, if you want to be in our country, either you play by the rules or we're going to have to impose a tariff. I don't think that's exactly the way the president has done it. What I do know is the uncertainty that this has caused and the costs that are being out there could have been more surgically applied, in my humble opinion. And I don't think we would have had the kind of situation now where companies are pulling back the brakes. Companies are telling me how much they have spent because of the change in the tariff rules. I mean, one company told me in one day, and it was a small company, it was a $100,000 cost difference for them just because of one day, because then that night he did a 90-day reprieve. Now they're back to $200,000 a day, I think. That's the environment by which we may get some short-term wins, but I don't think we're going to get the long-term. There is a better approach to try to figure out what's the right balance of tariffs. And I actually believe the president has that in mind. I think what he's just trying to do is get everybody's attention and get them at the table. And so I'm going to hope for the best that things will get worked out. The other thing that I have, nothing to do with the governor, nothing to do with politics. I'm just going to give you my honest opinion, which comes from the fact that age 23, I got sent traveling all over the world in the tobacco business, and I've been traveling over the world ever since. I've just been lucky. Man, you do not treat your longstanding partners and call them names. I just don't believe that's the right way to create trade policy. Say what you will about Canada. Say what you will about Mexico. Say what you will about the United Kingdom. I'm not going to get into any other names because that gets into complexities. But when we have had the kinds of relationships to try to bring world order since World War II, which had a succession previously to that of all kinds of chaos and wars, I don't think you go out and call them names in the public all for trade policy issues. I think there has to be a bigger vision here, and I get the experience of when you go to South Korea, which we can say what we want, but there is a country that depended upon us, still does, for national security, and they've created an amazing set of industries. And when you go over there, they thank the United States of America, and they have told me that's why we want to invest in the United States, because you took care of us. We don't want to align with China. And now I'll go to my last item, which I know this is in the media, and I don't want it to be in the media, but I'm always transparent. I don't want to echo Senator McConnell, but I will because I have great respect for the man. I got a chance to work with him in Washington. I wake up at night worried about the world. You know, when I see the president of Russia, the gentleman or the person from North Korea, all at the behest of President Xi in China, and they're sending messages, by the way, you all know that, I get nervous about the world. And I just want to make sure we're thinking as long-term as we can. And my goodness, it takes generations to make a friend. Let's don't lose them just because we're trying to create a tariff war that I don't think, you know, in the long run, it's the right thing. You got to balance out friendships as well as national security as well as economic prosperity. So it's not a very good answer for you, but it's probably the best that I can give. And you had a second part to the question.
I was just curious about immigration, particularly from the
war. Yeah. I guess I'll give it this straight up, which is the same thing. From my humble perspective, I've worked with so many folks from different parts of the world that they work hard, they bring a lot of value, and there's a lot of jobs that, you know, today it's just hard to find a workforce. I don't think they should be here illegally. I just get so ticked off with our current elected officials in Washington and those that came before. It's our rules that don't allow for the right balance of immigration because they're so screwed up that, you know, a best friend of mine from Australia, married to a U.S., took him 20 years, I think, to get his citizenship. I think first we need to look at the root issue, and that is how do we fix our immigration policies, because there is a certain balance of new, fresh faces coming into our country that made our country, that we need to help us grow our country. But I also don't believe we need folks to be able to come in and take advantage of different things or be given better advantages than our own citizens. I do know it's affecting some companies. I do know that there are some companies that will tell you we wouldn't be able to do what we do without at least some mix of individuals that are willing to come in and do the kind of things that you have to do in the workforce today. And that speaks a lot for who they are. But the ones who don't want to work and the ones that don't want to go through the right legal process, I don't think should be here. But it is having an impact on some companies. And let's focus more on the long term. What is it that I read? In 15 years, we'll lose another million people out of the workforce. Is that kind of right? Or maybe it's even less than. Maybe in 5-7 years. I think we're creating jobs at a faster clip than we have workforce. I want to keep creating jobs, and I know there's going to be some impact with automation and AI, but I think we can continue to create jobs and provide employment for everyone. But if you can't provide that employment for a company to be profitable, they will eventually go somewhere else, regardless of what tariffs are or issues are. We, I think, just got to look more long-term, because the kinds of jobs that you all are creating, they don't make a decision based on a 36-month cycle of what the business is, or even a 48-month. They're making decisions on what they believe is a 15, 20-year cycle. That's what we need to be doing, is thinking more long-term about those. And I think our policies around immigration and I think the ICE raids and other things is having an effect on companies. I think it's such a ticklish issue, though, that people are concerned about talking about it because it is complicated and there's really no right or wrong. There's just what we need to do. And I'll go back to the good old, let's make it simple. Let's fix our immigration rules so the people that we want here can get in here and stay here, and then let's make sure we keep taking it from there. Ladies always go first.
Yes, no doubt. Here you go.
How is your office involved in helping with the housing crisis in Kentucky?
We stay in our swim lane. We don't do housing programs and initiatives, even though I've popped off and talked about the fact that I'd like to see, some programming, and that's why you can go back to New Market Tax Credits. You can do New Market Tax Credits and do housing, or you can do the infrastructure for a housing initiative. I'd like to take a really hard look for every industrial park in the state of Kentucky that hasn't had any real activity in 5 years or longer. Should we be converting it to some kind of worker housing? I made a pitch, and I'm not lobbying, trust me. But I'd love to have a program where we had a little bit of juice or a little bit of cash that we could say, all right, we're going to do a worker housing project, and I'm going to pick on XYZ company that comes to Christian County, goes to Commerce Park, everybody's happy, and we go to them and say, hey, why don't you put up some funding, or you provide your balance sheet and let the community and the state come together and go after some grant funds. Let us do some worker housing together, but you need to be part of it. You know, when I was at Whirlpool, we did a project for an 82-unit multifamily development using the balance sheet of Whirlpool through a not-for-profit with some grants from the state to build it for worker housing. When I was there, we also did a residential subdivision right next to a paper mill and a Worthington Steel facility. And what we did is we spent a bunch of money berming lots of trees, put in walking trail, and we took what was an industrial park and turned it into residential, for which, think of the 48 units, 11 were tax credit affordable. The others were market rate. And today, some of those houses are in the $600,000-$700,000 right next to those affordable. I believe that if you had a company willing to do that, why wouldn't we pool our funding and resources? So in answer to your question, I'm very not making much of an impact. But I think we have to get out of our comfort zone and start looking at those kinds of initiatives, like I believe in doing everything. What's the problem? Who's got a stake in this, and who has a vested interest in solving the problem, and how do we get those folks at the table? And I believe if we had a model, I don't know of any company that wouldn't sit at the table and say, how can we help because it has an impact on us? Back to, you go to South Korea, you go to some parts of the world, there are areas where the companies actually build on-site housing. And a lot of folks will drive 3-4 hours and spend the week there in that company-provided housing. Because in Seoul is a perfect example. They don't have the workforce that they need, so they have found solutions. I think that's where we need to find answers. And so I've either got to do a better job, I've got to get more courageous, or I've just got to simply lay down in front of the road and say, until y'all come up with something, I'm not moving. And I know of a road in my hometown that I could do that and nobody would run over me for a long time. So any other comments? Carter.
Real quickly, I just wanted, you've got a lot of our partners, all of our partners are pretty much in the room that help us win and succeed in economic development. I want them to know that when you talk about this community region, it's not from just a glancing view. You've been in here multiple times in your tenure as secretary, and I don't want us to take that for granted. It means a lot to us that you've consistently come to the region as part of different projects, as for invitations, for events and speaking engagements. And so your perspective is really shaped on multiple visits. And with that in mind, I just wanted to ask you, you gave us great information. If you had to summarize very quickly the top one or two things that we have to keep doing to be competitive and winning in the landscape that we're currently in, what are those one or two things that we cannot lose sight of as a region?
First of all, you're in a leadership role. From with success comes accountability. And your impact on the region and the boundaries of that region are only going to continue to grow. And for anyone who's worried about the future of Christian County, there is a phenomenon happening that you all know. I mean, it's called Nashville. And again, I say things I probably shouldn't, but I look at government like word ecosystems. But I look at where economic activity is happening, and I say, well, how do I get our fair share of it? You're going to get more than your fair share over the years in front of us. That means some of these communities around us need better leadership coming from the economic development world. So it's going to be on your all shoulders. So that's the one thing I would say. Plus, I would also say, the more that you accept and assume the responsibilities of leadership, the more comfortable you get in thinking bigger and pushing all of us to do more. That's what leaders are supposed to do. I really humbly believe that you all have the capability, you have the tools, and you should accept that mantle, because that's how this whole region is going to grow. But it's going to be, I think, quite candidly, a lot on your all's shoulders. The other thing, and it's the workforce issue. You all have done it already. I mean, your schools came together to create technical training programs together, seamlessly integrated. You go over to Fort Campbell, try to get people to come and move in. I think the one thing was your question. I don't know Christian County well enough today yet, other than by driving around. You probably still have an issue with, do you really have the kind of worker housing or young professional housing that's going to help attract the kind of folks that we need to attract? You need to take a look at that and probably just look at the data, let the data guide you to the other second or third thing you need to be focused on. And you as leaders got to tell those non-participants, hey, go stand in the corner, because we're going to have to get housing done, or we're going to have to get this done or that done, because if we don't get it done, we are not going to get where we need to be, because it is really truly on your all shoulders for this region to go. And the last thing that I failed to mention that we got to fix from a legislative perspective, I'm now going to bore you, but bear with me, because I think you'll understand where I'm going in a second. Our tax credit program is built such that you get a credit based upon your investment, and then you get the incentives to offset that credit that you spent over a period of time. Our program today doesn't allow for leasing, leasehold improvements, R&D equipment, multiple sequential purchases of software, computer equipment. Where I'm going on this is we are a capital-intensive incentive. I want to change that because I think we need to be incentivizing where the biggest percentage of job growth is in this country. That's in the business and professional services, the R&D, the engineering, and we don't have tools that allow us. So if I want to go into a leased building or leasehold improved building and I'm going to set up an R&D, I don't get much incentive how we're structured. I say all that because I also believe, and this is truly a benefit, I believe with where things are going in Nashville, I believe with where things are going from a societal perspective, that younger people want to live in a better way of living in a better location. And I really believe that companies are looking for the same thing. And I really believe that this region can bring in even more high-tech kinds of companies in addition to the manufacturers. Because let's face it, and this is what we faced in where I lived in Michigan. We had all of our young people, I can't come to work for Whirlpool, there's nothing to do. And finally we started doing some things where it became nice, and we did this worker housing for them. And then they started coming to me and saying, you know, we don't need to have that nightlife. There's enough of it here during the week. We all maybe drive over to Chicago or up to Grand Rapids. How long is it to get to Nashville? If we all as a region don't step up and say, this is a sweet spot for where someone who is my son's age can probably afford a house, probably find a great job, probably find friends immediately, and have the kind of quality of life that is a little different than what he's used to, and the kinds of companies that need that kind of talent. You got all that stuff right here. So that's a little bit of a preachy way of saying we need to think as big as we need to think, because the opportunity is coming and will continue to be out there for you all to take advantage of it. We just need to make sure we got the tools and the right elements from a community perspective to do that. I am about 30 minutes past wearing out my welcome.
Well, I was going to say, we probably have time for one or two more questions, just to be respectful of everyone's time. I know it's during your professional work day, so.
Everybody was ready to get up and walk out 30 minutes ago. Now I got
We had one question right here.
I'll ask a tough question. So
I knew you would.
Yeah, you hit on it with the discussion of high tech. You talked about AI. So from a macro level, we hear about electricity, electricity, electricity. And then on a micro level, in my kind of distant involvement with economic development, everybody needs a lot of electricity. Alan talks about it all the time at Pinneral.
I've never heard him say that.
Yeah. You know, traditionally, it's odd. The generation of all utilities, even natural gas, you know, you'll see communities or states involved in that, but in the generation of electricity itself, it's always been kind of the opposite, with the exception of TVA, with electricity being so valuable now, and it's kind of happened like that. Do you see states or governments getting involved in the generation of it because it's going to be so important on a ton of levels?
So, bank gunny opening that I might, you know, I think I could be a bank teller again. My dad taught me how to do that. I'm going to ask the question straight up. A, if you really run the demand, look where we are. Our state used to be affordability, availability, and reliability. I worry about, candidly, any one of those three in our future. The grid is what it is. The demand is what it is, and it's growing. And I think the Public Service Commission is great, but I don't think that we have the dynamics as a state to really figure out how to get out front of where things are. And the minute we lose our availability, affordability, and reliability from a utility perspective, we lose our real competitive advantage, and it scares the you-know-what out of them. So I don't have an answer for you, but I believe we have to start getting involved. And I have spouted off and gotten in trouble a little bit with data processing centers, which can consume huge amounts of electricity. I have written, I have given speeches, and I have been caught on the carpet by some folks. Data processing center is not an economic development project. These data processing centers can come in and use so much electricity that they could suck out enough of the value that you don't have enough room to grow or bring in another industry. They can use enough water depending on what coolant process they go through, to cause you some real issues. And depending upon the capital stack of the lease agreement, if you do a deal with a developer and they bring and they do the sub deal with the company, and you don't structure that deal right, well, all the investment that has to be made could come falling back on the community. And we already are seeing that some companies are saying, well, let's put, you know, plans together to invest in new power generation that the residents have to pay for, but it's really going to be for the data processing centers. Now, let me flip that all back. If we could get more involved and proactive, I think we can turn data processing centers into economic development projects. If we could really work with the utilities and get the flexibility of knowing how to generate the power and make sure the capital stack and the guarantees are done right, you could actually take that horrendous amount of tax flow that's going to come in from property taxes and whatnot, direct it and channel it to buying up more industrial land to be able to have further usage, providing some kind of a TIF so that maybe there's a daycare solution that takes care of all the existing companies. I think we have to think beyond just what's happening with data processing centers to figure out how they can become an asset. And I think we have to also ask ourselves, where's all this power going to come from and how are we going to get it to make sure we are affordable, reliable, and has it as an availability? And Alan, am I wrong? If we don't have it, we're dead in the water when it comes to economic development projects and new companies. So it is something that scares me. I don't like government being involved in things very often. I do believe that we should be engaged to put the bumper guards and to put the guidelines and in some cases incentives to help direct. And I think that day is fast coming. And then I'll come back to one other little quick comment that's probably going to stir up a few things. I lived in Benton Harbor, St. Joe, Michigan for 28 and a half years. 8 miles from my house on one side of the lake, I lived on the lake, was a nuclear power generation facility. If you go upstream, I think it was 14 miles, there was another. So I lived between two nuclear power generation facilities for 28 and a half years. Never slept better in my life. Trusted exactly what they were doing. Loved the economic vitality it took. And I'm not espousing nuclear, but I believe our portfolio approach, coal, natural gas, wind, air, needs to include nuclear as we think long term, because that price gap between nuclear and other power generation is over time going to narrow. And that goes back to some of these data processing centers. You get one or two, then maybe you can start to look long term at a nuclear to offset some of that cost. So let me shake it up this way. I can't predict what 10 years are going to be like, but I can look at the run rates and tell you we're going to hit a cliff in Kentucky where we're going to need more power generation, and we need to be thinking what's every one of the levers that we can pull and pull smartly and do it the right way. And I think that's the role that government has to play in terms of trying to shape public policy and forcing people to make some of the hard decisions back to leadership. And a lot of people would rather kick the can down the road. We can ill afford to kick the can down the road relative to power generation in the state of Kentucky. Long answer, and it was a speech, and I apologize. Hey, folks. Oh, yes, ma'am.
Hi, good afternoon, Secretary. I just have one question for you. Can you talk to developing a trained and skilled workforce in a community to positively impact and support economic development? And I should also just to give you, so you can answer the question correctly, I'm from the local community college, so if you can promote that would be great.
I get in trouble, I come over and hug you and kiss. I really would. You all do a great job. You all do a great job. It is the single hardest thing to try to figure this thing out. I got some ideas. One, I know everybody's got to go, so I'm going to make this one real quick. I know that we need to do some talent attraction. We need to bring boomerangs back to the state. We need to help bring in all these folks. I think we also need to put money into promoting the kinds of jobs that we have, because the kinds of jobs that we have today in manufacturing, more often than not, as you know, they're wearing a white coat and carrying a laptop. And if you think you're going to go to work in a steel mill or North American Stainless, you probably go, oh, you go take that tour. They're all in front of a computer. And they're all making good money. We live in a world today where most parents, most educators, not you, and too many communities love all the manufacturing announcements, but they don't really try to promote the kinds of jobs that are there, and we don't do enough to help young people realize the opportunities that we have in our state in the what I call production jobs. And the data says college education is becoming less meaningful, always will be meaningful, but more need in the trades areas. We should be running ads. We should be doing promotion and back to public-private partnerships. Any company that says they can't find a workforce, let's partner, provide a few coins, and let's go out here and put a social media campaign to promote the jobs they have so that kids in the fifth grade, sixth grade, seventh grade get exposed to what these opportunities are because they're great opportunities. Then you all have a fighting chance of being able to start getting a kid with an interest, because if you haven't heard my speech and know y'all got to go, there are three things about workforce training. It's the yearning, learning, and earning. And if you can't get a person to have a yearning in their belly to want to do the learning, they ain't never going to do the earning. And if they've got enough of that yearning, they're going to do more learning to keep on earning until they come back and learn a little bit more. You have to work on that part of the process. And that's part of what I was trying to do on the promotions, and I know I got to go. But we've got to find those kinds of solutions and tools. And I'm non-political. I do think that universal pre-K for all has to be looked at. And here's the reason why. My dad, bank teller. My mom, a school teacher, and I guess the reason because she was, somehow 63 years ago, 64 years ago, they sent me to pre-K. Think about how long ago that was. My mother insisted to my father he has to go to preschool. I'm not very smart, but I had that same philosophy for my son. He's really smart. So I'm the failure, but he was the accomplishment. I just know from firsthand experience, and I know in Benton Harbor, the kids we worked with, we got into Boys and Girls Club or got into a Head Start program. You could see the difference in these kids. I don't think it's fair that you as a community college or you in the workforce, sometimes by the time you get these kids coming out of high school, it's almost too late. We have got to do a better job thinking long term. And I'm not saying universal pre-K is the easy solution, but I think it's one that we've got to take a look at, because you can scale that and make an impact pretty straightforward, simply, and quickly. I know there's issues, but back to my first slide. If we're not doing economic development, thinking about tomorrow and the next day's generation, we're not going to get it. And we need to applaud you and applaud you that's doing workforce development. We need to take chances with you. We need to be willing to use resources back to worker housing or whatever. The need is too great, and the opportunity is too huge, and we get it going right, and you all do it better than most. That's why you're going to have more and more companies come if we can get the workforce issue figured out. Not a very good answer. I apologize. I'm going to break this off because there's a police officer who's told me I have to quit. Folks, I bored you all. I know this wasn't probably what y'all wanted to hear. I just got to close with how I started. On the way out, just thank your neighbor. Pat yourself on the back. Community opportunity begins with community leaders, and everyone in this room is a community leader. Never, ever forget that. Never, ever forget that you are the ones that make a difference, and that's the reason I'm always willing to come here as often as I can. I'll go anywhere in the state. I love Kentucky, but you all really do hold a very special place in my heart. So thank you for letting me be here and boring you all today, and have a better rest of your afternoon.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you coming and talking to us today. We really do. And taking out of your busy schedule. We really appreciate that.
It's my pleasure.
Thank you, sir. Thank everyone for coming. Anything you need, just let us know. We'll be glad to help with you. And we'll reach out to Secretary Noel if you need us. Thank you all.